You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Going out to eat on Main Street in Santa Monica is like going to a lot of other places since the pandemic began. Table outdoors in a former parking spot, anyone? Main Street, with Venice and the city of Los Angeles just to the south, is a good example of an area where business was falling off in the before times and hurting during COVID. But now, it's hopping. Again, like many other places in Greater LA, this city was kind of winging it when it came to the rules, just to be able to find a way for people to eat outside. Well, now the city of Santa Monica has plans to keep the outdoor party going long term. And they're going to make it official with rules and, you know, taxes, fees.
It's not maybe not much for maybe bigger corporations or something like that. But for small business like us, it's really kind of, it's a big money.
That's Raimonda Gentiliane from Upper's Cafe, who talked to KCRW's Juliana Mayo. As cities all around L.A. are writing their new outdoor dining rules, Juliana looked into Santa Monica's new rules and fees to see what the changes are going to mean. And she's here to tell us what she found. Hi, Juliana.
Hi, Steve.
So these are brand new fees, right, for Santa Monica and the restaurant business there?
Oh, yeah, they are. For 2 years, the city, like all the cities in Greater LA, have been letting businesses use street parking spaces for dining tables for free. But as of October 1st, in Santa Monica, if you want to keep using them, you got to pony up. So basically right now, people are paying fees to get permits and inspections and stuff like that. Then once things are approved, a monthly fee will kick in. And I think we can all agree that no one likes to pay for things they used to get for free.
Yeah, well, of course not. What are these fees for and how much are restaurants being charged?
Well, for each chair a business puts in a parking space since the pandemic started, they have to pay a one-time wastewater management fee of around $1,300. Back in 2019, adding an extra seat cost $200. I'm not great at math, but that's a jump of more than $1,000 per seat in just a few years. And then once you get past those one-time fees, then they'll be paying a monthly fee of $680 for parking spaces. For some of these restaurant owners, like Lena Colhane at Crudo y Nudo, those one-time fees can add up to tens of thousands of dollars.
If we lose the park, that it's losing our business. And it's almost $50,000 that, you know,
they want
in fees. And, you know, three blocks up, they're not asking for that.
She's right. Up the street in Venice, the outdoor dining scene is still free.
Yeah, so Venice is right there, right across the border on Main Street. Can't they just move indoors?
I mean, no, they're this teeny tiny space with maybe three seats inside. And their business model was built during the pandemic around having this outdoor space. Without that outdoor space, they're taking a huge financial hit. Not to mention building that space costs them and everyone else who built parklets a bunch of money.
Are they planning to change the business model then?
It sounds like Crudo y Nudo is playing it by ear and trying to work with the city. But everyone I talked to on and off the record talked about trying to talk to the city, and no one seemed to have left with any measure of clarity or resolution. Other places like Esther's Wine Shop and Bar over on 7th are having to figure out what they're going to do because they're actually losing parking spaces. The city is only allowing businesses to keep two parking spaces for seating, and Esther's outdoor eating area has more than that right now.
For us, one car space could take away three or four tables, which would be really good revenue for us on a given night. On top of that, we'll have to start paying for the square footage of the two spaces. So we lose money because we're losing seating inventory, which is really helpful. Most people prefer to sit outside now. And the construction cost of scaling it back and doing it correctly, that's really hard for us to kind of take on. I can't imagine like some other businesses too. So, yeah.
Steve, you grew up in restaurants.
I did.
You know, losing a table is a big deal. That could be, you know, three or four checks in a night. That's a lot of money to lose. I learned about this story because I saw that Upper's Cafe on Broadway had gotten rid of one of their spaces and wondered what was going on. She just can't afford to keep it.
Isn't the city of Santa Monica, Juliana, worried that they're going to kill this, you know, the lively atmosphere certainly out in the city with these new charges or even drive out business?
You know, I talked to Constance Farrell, who is the public information manager for the city of Santa Monica, and she, like everyone else, agrees that outdoor dining has brought a lot to the city. She didn't seem worried that people might not be able to afford all these new fees.
It's about $1,300 for per seat for restaurants that are sit down. And we have heard a lot from restaurants and businesses, you know, that have expressed confusion around this fee. And I think the important thing to know is that it's one time. It only applies if you are adding net new seats, and also that the city is here and we want to work with businesses where this is, if this is a burden for you, we want to get you on a payment plan. We want to work with your business to ensure that this isn't a barrier to entry.
Every restaurant I spoke to said that for this plan to work, the city needed a more tailored approach. I talked to a coffee shop, a large restaurant, a small place with no indoor seating, and they're all paying the same monthly fee. The same costs, whether they're like a thriving high-profit place with a liquor license or one with a tiny margin that just sells baked goods and coffee.
So you mentioned at the top this monthly fee, the $680. What about that?
I mean, Farrell just kept repeating that it just wasn't that much money.
The cost of the program is really only about $680 a month for that license fee, which is a very low cost fee for expanded use of the public space.
But Raimonda from Uppers told me she's still recovering from opening during the pandemic, that the new fee just isn't affordable for her, hence the parking space she just gave back to the city.
What are the charges for? You mentioned wastewater management as well. Is that what that's about?
Right. So wastewater management is the one-time fee. And that's because they say that when you add a seat to a restaurant, you're adding potential water use. Crudo e Nudo disputes that, saying they're using compostable plates, so they're not washing more plates, even if there are more folks eating there. And Uppers doesn't even have plates. The monthly fee was described as a nebulous cost recovery. At one point, Farrell from the city said it was for inspecting the parklets, but she also mentioned that it would cover lost parking meter fees.
Well, because if you have the parking space for seating, then you don't obviously collect the revenue from the parking meters. So will other cities like, you know, the city of L.A. or Culver City, Burbank, you know, these other places around greater L.A., will they start to do what Santa Monica is doing?
You know, no one's really moving forward with things the way Santa Monica has. The city of LA said they'd have a report out before the end of the month with info on how to update codes if they decide to make it permanent. Burbank's program is set to expire at the end of the year. Ditto Culver City. All these outdoor restaurant seating programs kind of got thrown together pretty quickly during the pandemic, and now a lot of cities are thinking about what to do with those programs going forward, but most of them don't seem to be in much of a hurry. So the future is still really unclear. They may just want to keep an eye on Santa Monica to see how this shakes out.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on it, too, and you will, too, KCRW's Juliana Mayo. Juliana, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with KCRW's Greater LA, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Getting back into the job market after being incarcerated can be a big challenge. On the corner of Sentinella and Inglewood Avenues, there's a new soul food joint that's there to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, have it now. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Second Chance Soul Food Fish Fry is a casual fish fry restaurant that offers job opportunities to formerly incarcerated men and women who live in transitional housing. Ray Ford co-founded that restaurant, and he joins us right now. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Steve.
Thanks for coming on and talking to us about it. The restaurant is all about giving second chances, right?
Absolutely.
How many people you got employed over at Second Chance?
Currently, we have 6 employees. 4 of them are formerly incarcerated men and women trying to make successful transitions back into society.
Why is it important to you to do this, to give folks who were formerly incarcerated the job opportunities? I mean, obviously, it's tough, right, getting back into the job market after being incarcerated.
Well, me and my wife, we set up company, First Phase Inc., back in 2013. And so we're contracted with the state of California to provide housing to parolees coming from prison. So a lot of these guys have been in prison 10, 20, 30 years. They come home, they've never used cell phones, they've never used ATM machines, they just don't have those life skills. So we teach them those life skills and we help them make their transition easier back into society. So it's really hard for them to find employment. So myself, Johnny Smith, and Dion Corsi, we pooled our resources and opened up the Second Chance Corp, which is a company designed to open up other type of businesses so that we can give these men and women jobs. Second Chance Soul Food Fish Fry is the first business to come out of the Second Chance Corp. And that business is open so that we can give the men and women living in our homes jobs. And so we don't care about their background. We don't care about them being incarcerated, being on parole, any of that, because we just want these guys and these girls to be able to get out of prison and not recidivate and return back to prison. We want them to save their money, get an apartment, car, and make that transition back into society. It's very important to us that they do that.
So first phase is housing. And by the way, I think it needs to be underscored that when you get out, you get what? A couple $100 and that's it, right? It's not much more than that, right?
They call it gate money. That's what they give gate you, $200. Money. But through this fantastic program called the STOP program, and it's sponsored by the state of California. And so guys can leave prison, come directly to our home, and we will house them, we will feed them, we will help them with job opportunities, get them employed. They can stay with us from 6 months up to a year. And with that time, if you get a minimum wage paying job and you save $1,000 a month, after that year, you got $12,000 in the bank. You got enough money to get you an apartment and to transition on successfully. And that's what the program is all about.
Why this cause, Ray, for you and your wife, and that you care about it so much?
Because I was incarcerated myself, and my business partners were incarcerated, and most of my friends were incarcerated. And so after coming home from prison, this is the lane we decided to drive down, because it was hard for me when I first came home. And it was, you know, I know the struggle that these guys go through and these women. And so if I can take what I've learned and assist these individuals in coming home and doing right, then why not? There's nothing else to do. I'm a 64-year-old man. And what else am I going to do? Who's better suited to lead these individuals than somebody who's been down that path? We have 7 transitional homes, sober living homes set up in LA. We house over 50 people. And now we have the Second Chance Soul Food Fish Fry, where we're giving individual jobs. And we plan to open more, another one and another one and another one. And the more we open, the more opportunities we can give to these men and women coming home. And so this is what our cause is. We love it. We love it. It feels so good when you see a success story. You know, this guy without us may have gone back to their old habits, begin to associate with the same people, and then end up back in prison. So when you see a guy that comes back after he's been with us for, you know, 8 months to a year, and he's got an apartment, he's got a car, he's got a job, he's doing well, and he comes back to ask if we need any help, is there anything we can do? That feels good. It just feels good. And so that's what we have dedicated our lives to doing.
That's the top end of all of this, right? To get the people the help that they need to make sure that they can transition back into society. But I want to get to the food part. How's the food at Soul Food?
The food is great. Our sides are homemade. I mean, we got greens, we got mac and cheese, we got candy yams, cornbread from scratch.
So it's true soul food.
It is true soul food, and it is scrumptious. We have our pastries.
Man, you're making me hungry right now.
My mother sent my niece to culinary school to be a baker. She knows how to bake.
Are you serious? Love that.
We are trying to brand and promote Grandma Eva's pastries. So that we have Grandma Eva's 7-Up cake, Grandma Eva's bourbon pecan cake, Grandma Eva's red velvet cake.
I love it.
All of these things. You got to come.
Oh,
out.
I'll be there. Are you kidding me? Come you give me some 7-Up cake and I'm there, man. Candied yams? It. Are you kidding me? Oh, man.
Absolutely.
That's
Absolutely.
Amazing.
We had our grand opening June 18th. And every week it's growing and growing and growing. And people love our cause. People know that if they come to Second Chance Soul Food Fish Fry, that they're supporting formerly incarcerated men and women that's trying to do the right things with their life. It's just a good feeling. I mean, the environment is great. You come in, you feel at home. The guys and girls that's working there, they're sweet, and they appreciate what's being done for them. And the customer service is great. The food is great. And the cause is exceptional.
Ray Ford, I want to thank you for coming on and talking to us. Ray is one of the co-founders of Second Chance Soul Food Fish Fry, the founder of First Phase Incorporated, too. Ray, thanks so much.
You are so welcome, Steve. Good talking to you. Anybody that's listening to this voice, come to Second Chance Soul Food Fish Fry in Inglewood and have a great meal and support a great cause.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Southern California has said farewell to yet another iconic LGBTQ space. James Beach, a Venice restaurant known as much for the community it fostered as its food, shut down last month after 26 years. Mona Holmes is a reporter at Eater LA, of course, one of our regular contributors here at Greater LA. Spent some time at James Beach over the decades, and she's here with us now to talk about it. Hey, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
All right, so set the scene for us. What did this restaurant look like and feel like?
Okay, so as someone who loved that place in the 90s, 2000s, and I don't know, maybe about a decade ago, I remember most the white exterior and interior. One of my favorite things to look at was the swim trunks light fixtures. You know, they were adorable. Leather booths, the foliage. There was this really bright patio. It was all designed by a local artist named Billy Al Bankston. And it had this brass trellis gate, a gold gym weight steel window, which was a tribute to Muscle Beach. There were all of these local elements of it, and always people in it with some sort of cocktail or glass of wine in their hand.
Which so is nice, yeah.
It is. I mean, it wound up being actually wonderful enough where TV shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm came in to shoot a couple of episodes, including their reunion episode, along with a fish taco moment from the movie I Love You, Man, with Paul Rudd and Jason Segel.
How did it fit larger into the queer bar and restaurant scene in LA, especially on the West Side?
Well, you know, I spoke to both owners, and what they told me is that the West Side was largely quiet as far as queer spaces go.
There was Roosterfish, of course.
There was Roosterfish, yeah. Another longstanding iconic bar on Abbot-Kinney. But that was about it. And how they fit into this community is that they just loved Venice. They felt very much a part of it. They were not only working there and living there and thriving there, there was just something about them feeling like if we're going to love this place, we're going to contribute to it as much as possible. And they were also a couple. And so you would get them hosting events. Like there's a really great photo that they sent me of them with their chef hosting a James Beach, James Bond themed party. Or, you know, it was.
Because why not?
Because why not? And, you know, they wanted to show as much love as they had for Venice to those who were visiting Venice.
I read in your piece that the owners met at the West Beach Cafe. What's their story?
Evans and Samico, they met in 1982 in James Beach's predecessor, the West Beach Cafe. And it's a really sweet story. A friend just invited one of them in and wound up being served by their bartender, Dennis Murray, who wound up coming over to James Beach when they eventually opened it in 1996. And they had pretty much just hit it off from there and, you know, have been together ever since. And then said, you know what? Oh my God, this space is open. Let's open a restaurant. And they both said, and I quote, you know, that we're young enough to try this. And if it doesn't, we can just try something else.
Right.
And that was 26 years.
And they're still together to this day.
Still together. Yeah. And they're lovely too. They're some of my favorite people.
Sadly, of course, as we're mentioning that it shut down this restaurant and bar, but you know, a lot of queer spaces have shut down during the pandemic because of the huge financial strain. Oil Can Harry's, which was a big blow, right, in Studio City, Gold Coast in West Hollywood, Rage, of course. I mean, was James Beach another COVID casualty, or did something else happen?
No, the owners were realizing that a restaurant like James Beach, with their price point, with their menu, they were realizing that it wasn't going to be enough to sustain them, you know, for much more. And every single restaurant in Los Angeles right now is also struggling with employees and staffing, but they're also ready very much to move on to something new. And even though they're absolutely, I have no doubt that they're going to stay in Venice until they leave this earth. they're that huge of fans. But Venice is a very different type of city than it was in the 90s than it is now. There's a lot more moneyed restaurants with a ton of investors that are trying to grasp a very different type of crowd. And they're not up for doing that anymore. So they've decided to step away.
And the rent is just, I mean, outrageous, right?
$26,000 a month.
I mean, and when they started, not that much, certainly.
$5,000 to
$26,000. I mean, I don't even know. And you know from the restaurant business, I mean, the margins are very thin.
Extremely thin.
Yeah.
And somehow they made it work. They were constantly busy, but they're realizing that this is a good time to get out and go while you're on top.
But stay in Venice. They've been very active in their community of Venice. You said they're never going to leave. I mean, how active are they there? Why is it such a space for them?
You know how it is. You know, when you fall in love with a part of Los Angeles, you're in it. And these two are also, I wouldn't call them fully responsible for these things, but they had a very high level of active participation in them, including installing the Venice sign on Windward Avenue at Pacific. The sign was originally installed in 1905, and they wound up getting it up in 2007. And, you know, it just took a little workaround from the California Coastal Commission, and that was their idea. They're also huge players in the Venice Art Crawl. They're just the type of people who believe in giving back. So it's, you know, Venice wouldn't be Venice without them.
But sadly, we're going to be without James Beach.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Mona Holmes, reporter for Eater LA and a regular contributor here on Greater LA. Mona, as always, thanks.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, a visit to a tiny, doomed ecosystem at the top of the San Bernardino Mountains. To Pebble Plains we go on tomorrow's GLA. Online anytime, by the way, at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share your thoughts with us. Share a story idea with us, too. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Or you can just grab the podcast wherever you get your podcast. You don't have to wait for 2:30 and 6 o'clock to hear the show. You can hear it on your time. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Robin Estrin, Phil Richards. Welcome back, Phil. Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.